In a previous episode of the Vacuum Engineering Show, I talked about hash tables and how powerful and very commonly used they are. Given a key, we can find its corresponding value in no time, in zero seek time. We're not searching, we're not scanning, we're not doing anything. It's a single access in memory retrieving that value. The power behind hash tables is the use of the arrays, which is a very common data structure, obviously. A very, very common data structure, right? Knowing the array position, the index, you can get the value of the array immediately because, you know, how does memory work? If you know the address of the RAM where your cell exists, where your values exist, you can get the value immediately. Right? The CPU can fetch the value immediately for you. Right? So once you find the index, you find the address, you get the value. So what the hash table guys did, it says, okay, we're going to take your name, your string, your color, your car, your anything that represents this key. We're going to hash it using a one-way function and then convert that into an index using a modulo function based on the array size. So we eventually, from the name, we convert and get an index, and that will give us the address and the memory, and we can get the value. So that's the trick the hash table guys use. You know? So the only cost you add is like what? The hashing function, which is not really that bad, but that's the power of the hash table. But the problem is, the moment the size of the array changes, the hash table size changes, this all falls apart. Yeah? Because if blue, the key blue, used to fit in index number 11, if you increased or decreased the array size, and you know where I'm going with this, then the blue will fit into index 99 now. And as a result, right, you either won't find the value or you're going to start writing the values duplicate and everything will basically be bad. So you now have to really move things around in your resize, and it's a really a big problem. So why I'm mentioning that? The problem that we are seeing today with distributed system is as follows. If my database are increasing in size and it no longer can fit in a single instance, I bumped up the vertical scaling to its maximum. It's now 48 core CPU, 3 gigahertz, whatever. You know, it's 512 gigabyte or even 1 terabyte RAM. But still, I have billions of rows. I added all the indexes. I tried to partition it horizontally in the same instance by range. So, but still, even the partitions are so large. So that machine cannot handle the queries I'm throwing at my beautiful database. So what do? We distribute it. We shard the database. I really don't like to go there unless I kind of exhaust all my options. And believe me, people don't even look at the options anymore. People are very quick to follow modern things, you know, without actually going to the basics and trying to tune your database and getting a better performance. But regardless, let's assume you're YouTube scale. Let's assume you're Google scale. And you ran out of ideas. That single instance can't handle anymore. You need to distribute that billions of rows table or key dictionary or collection into multiple servers, right? So instead of having billions, let's have, I don't know, few millions on this server, a few millions on this server, a few millions on this server, a few millions on this server. Immediately a problem occur. The problem is like, how do I know, right? If I have a key, I want to look it up. We introduced an intermediary problem, right? That didn't exist before. Well, first, if I have a key, I go to my database server and I ask it and then immediately give it to me. I only go to one hop. Now, if you're distributed and you only have the key, you have to answer the first question, which server should I connect to retrieve the key? Which server hosts my key? And that is the problem here. That is the original and only problem that we have in distributed system. Which server should I connect to fetch that key? Okay. So the trick was always, let's figure out the server from the key. And that is the concept of hashing. Hashing tables appear here. So in this episode of the Back Engineering Show, I'd like to talk about that a little bit, distributed hashing, and then what problems did we have and how consistent hashing solves this problem. And obviously, nothing is perfect in this world. So I'd also like to talk about the problems consistent hashing actually have today. Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. This is the show where we discuss the art and the craft of building software and cover recent news on backend technologies. If you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and rate it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. With that said, let's get on the show.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. And the concept of distributed system is a must when you get to a certain scale. Yeah, I always try as much as possible to, you know, push people against being distributed if they can do things to have their single instance, you know, be more performant when it comes to query. Because you see, a lot of engineers hurry up to scale, right, and spend more money to start to work with the distributed without actually, while their query is actually using 500% of their CPU and doing like a million logical reads, you know, where they can tweak it a little bit, tweak it and tune the database a little bit, understand their queries so they can half or even, you know, lower that cost, you know, as a result. But we don't think this way anymore. We always take the shortcut, unfortunately. But regardless, so usually advanced and adept DBAs try to optimize a single query. As a result, if you can get a query to consume less CPU, even if it's a small query, scaling that query, right, will eventually give you better scaling on your instance. But that's not our topic. That's another day. But let's say you reach the state where you exhausted all your options, you know, when it comes to a single instance, right? Then you moved. It says, hey, I have to move to a distributed system. It's just too large. You got to move. So people, what they did, says, okay, I have a key. And now I don't know which, I have 10 servers, right? I don't know where this key lives in this 10 server environment. So they said, all right. So what we're going to do, let's say I have four servers, a cluster with four servers, and I want to distribute my values across these four servers. So server S0, S1, S2, and S3, right? What we're going to do is, like, giving the key, I need to know the server name, the server IP. And that's something that we are introducing as a problem, right? We introduced a friction that didn't exist before. First, previously, it was just one server. We know the server, right? But now we have to figure out from the key, we have to figure out the IP address of the server to connect to in order where our key actually exists. That answer can be answered using a very simple hashing function. So we're going to hash the value. Let's say I have value number 4. Going to hash it, get some value, and then that value, we're going to do modulo number 4, and that gives you server 0. So store server 0 right here, right? In this case, right? So 4 modulo 4 is 0. And then, okay, how about key number 5, right? Or even whatever that key used to be. Maybe let's say it's a blue or red, right? Red, you're going to hash it, get a value number 5, which is a number. And then 5 modulo 4 will give you S1, and S1 will go right here, right? So 5 right? Lives in S1. And same thing, 6 will live in S2. And 7 will live in S3. You're just going to do modulo 4, because 4 is your server pool size, right? And then let's say going back, let's say 8, then 8 modulo 4, oh, so back to 0. And then you get the point, which works perfectly. From the key, I was able to figure out the server. So cost is 0, it's nothing. We solved distributed system right there. Here's one problem though. As long as you have 4 servers, your life is beautiful. You don't have to worry about anything. But now, even those 4 servers reach their limit. Again, whatever reaches the limit, that means you're at the globe scale. You know, you have so many users, right? So to me, that I need more than four machines, database instance, that means I am at the global scale and I have users left and right, millions of heads, you know? So that's the scale we're talking about, right? So I say, okay, all right, let's just add another server. Server 4, S4. So we have S0, S1, S2, S3, and S4. Sounds good. Comes back to the problem of hashing tables. The moment you change the size, the whatever value were original, so the values, their original key values, are now all shuffled, right? Previously, value number 4 used, you do 4 modulo 4, the key 4 used to live on server S0 because 4 modulo 4 is 0. But now 4 modulo 5, which is now the new servers, we have 5 servers, is actually gives you value 4. So it's now is in S4. So now what you need to do is like move the key with value 4 from server 0 to server 4. And now you have to move everything else. And this is basically the same thing. 5 modulo 5, right? The server 5, the key 4 will move to server 4. The key 8 will move to server 3. The key 5 will move to server 0. The key 6 will move to server 1, and the key 7 will move to the key 7 will move to S1, right? So everything will be shuffled, and the operation of adding a new server will cost us a huge amount of effort to kind of shuffle things around. So think about networking, think about database usage just to add another server. So you're not only bothering one server, you're bothering the entire cluster with your operation, because you have to shuffle things around, right? Because your key no longer maps. So what people think, what the smart people say, okay, let's invent something that might solve this problem, which is called consistent hashing. So how does it really work? So they went back to the idea, the core idea. We use the index as the server names here, right? Let's flip this. Let's change this a little bit. Let's not be very discreet, like, oh, server 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's build a ring. Let's actually build a ring of these servers. All right. So instead, they think of this idea as an actual ring, as an actual circle. So values go back, right? And remember, a lot of people thought of a lot about this to solve this problem. And the key here is, and instead of the output of the key hash going to a server, we're going to approximate it, you know, by using this concept of the ring. So let's take an example, so clarify it. The first thing we're going to do is the servers themselves, we need to fit them on the ring, which this is something we didn't do before. So the ring is, think of this ring as a circle, so the degrees, based on the degrees, this is a 360 degrees, right? So server, let's say server 1, you're going to do a modulo 360. Let's say we're going to get a 0, right? So we're going to put server 1, and ask, we're going to call it S0, based on the degree here, right? And then let's say server 2, IP address 10.0.0.3, modulo 360, we got 90, right? And again, I'm picking values that are so rounded up. This is just for example. You're hardly gonna get S90, right? Exactly, right? You're gonna probably get X S27, right? But yeah, X90. Same thing, server 3 or server 4, you're going to get S180 if after you do that. And then server 3, you're going to get S270. We have S0, S90, S180, and S270. You know, that's that completes an actual ring. And for people listening in the podcast, think of this as an actual ring with the values for servers in each corner, effectively. So why are we doing this? The beauty here is we have values, and this is the key here. Let's have a key value of 1,000. Same thing you're going to do, right? The 1,000, the key value 1,000, right? However this key exists, maybe it was blue and then you did a hash and then you got the number 1,000. You take that 1,000, right? And you do a modulo 360. Will you get an actual server immediately, the server index? No, you're not going to get that. So now let's actually put it in an actual example right here, right? So now I'm about to insert a value. I'm going to insert a new key. Value 1,500. That's my key right there. So what you're going to do is you're going to do modulo 360, which is the circle. Again, don't be very specific on the value 360. You can double this and double this and double this to get more values. But this is just an example. So 360 here. So if I take 1,500, right, and modulo 360, I'm going to get a value of 60. If you think about it, S60 doesn't exist. There is no server marked 60. But here's a trick. We do have a server marked as 0, and we have a S90. So S60 really fits between the 0 and the 90. And what you do is you pick the next one. So 60 fits between 0 and 90 immediately. So that key will go to the next value, which is S90. And that's how you do it, basically. Now, visually, this is easy to understand, right? Computationally, this is not as simple. Because what does that mean between 0 and 90? I have four servers, and that's easy. To find where your value fit, how 60 fits between 0 and 90 is actually computational. And that's another binary search to actually find that value. That's a little bit outside the scope of this video. But now once we have that value, we have the 60. Now, okay, 60 is like, what's right after 60 is 90. Now, okay, so value 1500 fits on server S90. That's how we solve it. So by doing this scan, what is the next one? We really remove that discrete value lookup, you know? We instead changed it with a scan. And the beauty of this scan is going to save us a lot of things in the future. Let's continue these examples. All right, 1,500. Let's take another example. Let's say 2,000. 2,000 modulo 360 is 200. 200 fits between server S180 and server S270. Again, 180 and 270, think of as degrees, right? So right there. In this case, okay, what's exactly right after 200? It's 270. So 2000 lives in 270. So think of it like you're looking at clockwise. So whatever is the next value, you're going to get that. And then you put another value, say 3000 modulo 360. That's 120. 120 fits between server 90 and server 180. So like move directly to the 180. And then you store the value 3000 there. How about 1000? 1000 modulo 360 actually gives you 280. Wait a minute. 280 is that there are no server after. The last server with the largest value is actually S270. There is no larger after that. Right? There is no larger than server 270. This is value is 280. So what do you do? If there's no larger values, you go back to the circle, right? And this is very nicely, when you actually draw the circle, you see that S280 is between S270 and S0. So you immediately go and put the value 1000 in server 0. And that's how you build the ring. Let's take another example for completeness here. 4,000. 4,000 modulo 360 gives you 40. 40 is between 0 and 90, right? Oh, that's very nice. So now we have two keys lives in server S90 in this case. Yeah, that's very interesting. Let's spice things up. Now, what if I added a new server here? Look at the beauty of this here. Now, if I add a new server here, let's say its IP address is 10.0.0.13, right? I do it modulo 360 and I got 50. So now my server is actually S50, fits right between S0 and S90. Keep that in mind. Now, things change because we still need to move data around, but not as much. Let's figure that out. How much data I need to move around? Well, the algorithm goes like this, right? Remember, if you have values, if you add values as 50 in this case, anything between the 0 and the 50 really needs to be fed in server 50, right? Because that's the algorithm. That's the range here that we're looking at right here. And so if you, the algorithms look like this, like, okay, so what is the server right after me? Well, the server right after me is right here, is 90, right? So let's query that server, find out all the hash values, find out all the hash values where the actual hash value is less than 40, right? Because S90 would have stored everything between 0 and 90, right? So find out everything that is less than 50, because I should store these now, right? So we found one entry, which is 40. Oh, 40 doesn't belong 90 anymore. So go ahead and talk to server 90, establish a communication, could be TCP, could be anything, and then start moving data around, right? Hey, it's 90. And do you have anything with a hash value that is less than 40, less than 50, which is me? Oh yeah, I have this value. Move it to me. And as a result, we just establish the data here. So now think of it as I add another server, the only change is my neighbor, really. I'm only gonna bother my neighbor, and it's only the neighbor right after me, right? That's what I'm gonna do in this case, right? And so instead of actually bothering all the servers in my cluster, I'm only bothering one server. So that's much, much, much better than actual hashing. But still, there is a cost to it, right? There is complexity. You need to build all that out. What if the operation failed? How do you roll back? What if, do you add the server anyway? What if one of the keys didn't transmit? So we're adding so much complexity. So distributed systems are not easy, you guys, right? Even if you think about it, let's take another example where we're removing a server. If we go back to our original case where we have S0, S90, S180, and S27, and let's say I'm going to remove S90 altogether. So now what happens here, if you remove S90, then anything that S90 had must go to S180, if you think about it, right? Because any value, so now what happens is the operation should go, okay, remove server S90, that is the operation that we need to do. Right. I'm going to remove that, physically remove it. Not talking about a crash. That's a completely different story, right? Crash, you don't even have time to move anything, right? So if you, that's why you have to have redundancy. That's another complication right there. But if I have a physical operation that say, okay, I want to remove this for maintenance, remove S90. Well, S90 holds all values between 0 and 90. So all of those should go directly to the server right after me clockwise, which is 180. So remove all those puppies and stick them to where? To server 180. That's a very expensive operation as well. So if you think about it, consistent hashing are powerful, is powerful. The algorithm of consistent hashing are very powerful. But the limitation here becomes you still need to move data around. And the more data you have, you know, in these instances, then the transmit of these will take more time. So adding or removing server is actually not a trivial operation. Yeah. And then you really need to think about another thing that is called replication. You need to duplicate this data as much as possible because a server might crash, so you need to have a backup. So just using this algorithm blindly is not enough. You have to cater for crashes, you know, and as a result, you have to have a backup. Oh, if this server is not available, let's have a mapping server that actually directly copies that data immediately, right? So that's what you do. You have to do that. Well, what if two servers map to the same hash. You can't have that. If you have a lot of more than 360 servers, you're bound to have the value that fits on the same server. And I'm not sure what you can do here. What you can do is, like, I suppose in this case you can treat it as a replication. So you have like a backup scenario where we have this server. You can either put it in both. Right? That was an episode of the consistent hashing. Hope you enjoyed this video. I'm going to see you in the next one. You guys, that was awesome. Goodbye.